Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Shea Serrano is a New York Times best-selling author and is a native of San Antonio. He didn't come from wealth, but he made his way to Sam Houston State University and struggled as a freelance writer in Houston for years, writing about the things he loved. The Rap Yearbook, published in 2015, takes readers on a journey through the history of rap from 1979 to the present. Basketball and Other Things came out in 2017. Its quick-fire chapters ask and answer questions like, who was the greatest dunker of all time? And which version of Michael Jordan was the best Michael Jordan? The book even got a shout-out on Facebook by then-President Obama. Both books were illustrated by Dallas artist Arturo Torres, and both made it to the New York Times bestseller list. Serrano's third book, Movies and Other Things, might just make the pair the first Mexican-Americans to make it to the list three times. Serrano joins us on Fronteras to talk about his accidental success. It all started in San Antonio's Valley High neighborhood on the southwest side.
At the time, I thought this is just what everybody's life looks like. This is a neighborhood everybody lives in. I think the area is like, you know, over half of it on some sort of government assistance. The graduation rate is much lower than normal. I think the crime rate over there is higher than normal. But it never felt dangerous or bad. It just felt like this is regular. This is what it is. As far as like how it affects your pop culture consumption, it's the same anywhere. You're just doing the stuff that your friends are doing. Like, what's everybody listening to? I'll listen to that, too. What's everybody watching? I'll watch that, too.
So kind of the formative years, I think, for most kids growing up are, you know, maybe around junior high or high school. Mm-hmm. What were sort of the things that you were listening to or watching? Because you kind of write what you know. And I've noticed that some of the past material you've written about rap, you've written about basketball, mm-hmm. and you're writing about movies. So I'm thinking that all of those played a really huge part in your upbringing.
Yeah, for sure. You know, me and my little knucklehead friends were running around playing basketball wherever we could at different parks over there, or we would go in there and play because the courts are only 8 feet tall, so you could dunk it. Yeah, we were playing a lot of basketball. We were listening to a lot of rap. That's about the time where you want to separate yourself from what your parents are doing, and you're like, all right, my dad is listening to like a lot of Tejano music or like classic rock, and my mom is doing a lot. She's from Detroit, so she was listening to a lot of Motown stuff and oldies, and I was like, what else can I do? And then me and my friends started, I don't even remember who it was. Somebody brought a rap tape, and we started doing that. And then, yeah, the movies you just watched, to like, I don't know, if you're 13, 14, 15 years old, you started watching stuff like Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society or Blood In, Blood Out, or those sorts of movies, and Bloodsport and Kickboxer fighting movies. Like, just the stuff that seems like this is what you would do if you were in a little bit of trouble.
You get out of high school, you go into college. What was the idea when you went into school?
Oh, shoot. So I left out of Valley High. I'd never gone anywhere. I'd never been like past Ingram Park Mall. That was like as far as that was like the edge of my universe. Ingram Park Mall on one side, Poteet on the other side. And that's it. That's where you lived. And so going to Sam Houston, going to college, it was like, number one, it was a big culture change. Because where I was, everybody around me looked like me all the time. You and I are sitting here right now. You've got brown hair and brown eyes, and I hear it in your voice, and I probably know what your upbringing was like. And then I get to school, and the population at the school was like, I don't know, maybe 14, 15,000 at the time, and they had something like less than 100 Mexicans or something crazy like that. Everywhere I looked was white faces. There was like a strong black population there and very few Mexicans. So it was like a big change for me. It was the first time I'd ever gone to a white party or a black party or anything like that. And I don't think it was hard, but there were definitely points when you're like, dang, I just want to go to Mendez Cafe and like eat some tacos and be with my friends, you know?
What was it that you were studying in college?
I went to school to get a degree in criminal justice.
Was there a reason for that?
We had a criminal justice program at my high school, and I really liked it. And it was like the one thing that I did well in at school. I was terrible at math, terrible at writing, terrible at reading. But the criminal justice stuff, it just made sense to me. This was when the TV show CSI was like really popular. And my mom was reading like FBI books. I said, oh, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be that guy. I want to have like a gun holster and like a cool jacket. And I come home for Christmas and I take it off and everybody sees my gun. Like for the just the total wrong reasons. So I go to Sam Houston and I start studying criminal justice. And I think it's like my second year that I'm there. I took a class and the professor's walking around and she was like putting these manila folders on everybody's desk. She's going like, you know, very dramatically, just sort of dropping them down. In my head, it's dramatic. And we get the folders and she's like, all right, go ahead and open those. And I opened it up and it was pictures of actual crime scenes, like murder victims. And as soon as I saw those photos, I was like, oh, this is not for me. I can't do this. I'm not built for this. You got to be built a certain way to look at that and feel something other than just like total agony and pain and like heartache. That day I went and I saw my counselor. I told her I don't want to do this anymore. I can't do this. Like, let's find something else. And then so I transitioned from that into psychology.
So how did you end up doing what you're doing?
Again, this was totally by accident. All of this stuff is just, I got out of school at Sam Houston. I started working construction like right after that. I did that for 2 years. And I was like, this sucks. I don't want to do this. I got a college degree and I got to do this shit. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I had always wanted to be a teacher. It seemed like a cool job to do. And then I got hired at a school and I quit my construction job. I went there and I just started teaching. I did that for 9 years. And somewhere in there, we had like a family emergency with my wife. She was a teacher as well. We were getting married. She was pregnant with twins. And she went into labor 4 months into the pregnancy and she couldn't work anymore. All of a sudden, we were down to one teacher check because we hadn't saved any money because you don't know to save money when you're 25, 26 years old.
And you probably had student loans,
too. We had
too.
Student loans that I was ducking and dodging and not paying. Like, I applied at Target and Walmart and Papa Doe. And so I was just trying to find something that I could do on my own. I'm Googling work-from-home jobs. Writer was one of them. And I was like, well, I got the internet and I got a computer. I could probably – I didn't know they give you money to do this. I could do this. And that's how it all started.
So, again, writing what you know, what was it that you started writing?
The first couple of things I wrote were about sports. It was like about the Houston Texans because the Texans are very big in Houston and then the Astros. It's really hard to be a freelance writer. It's probably harder now than it was back then. There were more places to write, but it was like you were always trying to find work. So I was trying to figure out how do I like ensure that I'm going to get work each week because I need money each week. And so I'm just looking through all the different papers. And I found this one called the Houston Press, which is their alt-weekly there. They cover a lot of, like, arts and culture. I couldn't pitch them sports stuff because they weren't doing sports stuff. So I said, well, I know like, a little bit about rap. I'll pitch them that. And then I started writing about rap. And then once I had done that for a while, 2, 3, 4 years, I was able to pitch bigger places like MTV or Complex or Rolling Stone or whatever. And I could tell them, hey, you should let me write about this. Because I've been doing it for this many years and I have these connections and I can like plug in the pieces that you need. And it just kept getting, bigger and bigger and bigger.
So what was your big break?
The first break I got was at the Houston Press with Chris Gray and Margaret Downing, who were my editors there, because they made it clear to me that they were investing their time and their energy in me. They weren't just saying, go write about this thing. And then I write it and they go, cool. And then they put it up on the website. They would go write this thing, and I would write it, and they'll be like, this sucks. Let me tell you how to make this better. So that was like the first real one. And then the first like big money break was when Bill Simmons showed up. Bill Simmons is like probably the most popular sports writer that's ever been. At the time he was working at ESPN. He had his own like a branch of the website called Grantland, and they were like paying real money to writers to just write, and that's all he wanted you to do. That's all he cared about. They just wanted you to write about stuff you thought was cool or interesting because they knew you were going to do good work.
How did you make the leap from writing articles to writing a book?
Again, totally by accident. I'm walking backwards down a hallway and people keep pulling me into rooms. And with the book stuff, there was a rapper in Houston named Bun B. He called me one day and he wanted to do a book. And we just started brainstorming ideas and then we ended up on a coloring book. And that's how the book stuff started.
And so from there, you eventually ended up writing a book about sports, basketball, and other things. Mm-hmm. And so how did that concept, did it grow out of a series of articles that you did?
Basketball and other things. No, that was like just a that was brainstorming with my editor. So the Rap Yearbook was like an actual 240 pages, and my editor, this woman named Samantha Wiener, we were just trying. I was like, okay, I want to write about basketball. What can we do? Eventually, we settled on what Basketball and Other Things became, which was just like every chapter is going to be a different question that we're going to try to answer, and we'll put them all together and put some pictures in there, and here we go.
So let's talk a little bit about President Obama. He gave you a shout-out on Facebook. So what was that like?
That was chaotic. That's what that was like. It didn't seem real. He still does this thing where like he puts a list together, like his favorite books he read that year or something. And for whatever reason, he ended up with a copy of the basketball book. But he picked it up, and he read it, and he liked it, and he included it on his list. And that was nuts because, number one, this is President Obama. Also, like there's a bunch of silly stuff in the book, and it was just funny to me to picture him reading some of the stuff that I had written. But yeah, I remember exactly when it happened. It happened on like New Year's Eve. I was sitting on my couch. I was minding my own business watching TV, and my phone started buzzing. And I opened it and I looked and I saw there's like somebody had sent me a screenshot of the list, and there was my name on there. And I was like, well, clearly this is Photoshop, and I just closed it. And set it down, and then it just kept buzz, 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 like more and more and more. And I was like, and everybody started sending it to me. This is on Twitter. Everybody's freaking out. And I was like, I don't know if this is real. I went on his Facebook. I saw that it was like on his verified. I was like, holy shit, this is like a real thing. And then people started writing articles about his list because they do it every year. And my name was in there, and like, it was unbelievable. It was like a crazy thing. Like, you know, a bunch of my friends write books as well, and they're going to get on the bestseller list, and they're going to do this. But that's always like a card I can play.
We're talking with Shea Serrano, San Antonio native and New York Times best-selling author. When we come back, Serrano talks about his newest book, Movies and Other Things, which, among other things, examines the horror that is the beginning of Finding Nemo.
The dad survives. He gets knocked unconscious. And when he wakes up, his wife has been eaten. All of the babies, like 400 plus babies have been eaten, with the exception of one, which turns out to be Nemo.
That's next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Shea Serrano is an accidental success. From his youth growing up on San Antonio's southwest side to studying criminal justice, then psychology in college, to working construction jobs, to teaching, to freelance writing, his path has led him to land on the New York Times best-selling list, twice, with the Rap Yearbook and Basketball and Other Things. Serrano's newest book is Movies and Other Things. It asks frank questions like, who's the better tough guy movie Dog Owner? Hint, it's not John Wick. Or, which was better, Get Out or The Social Network? One chapter answers which race Kevin Costner white saviored the best. Another chapter puts you inside a press conference with Michael Myers of Halloween. Serrano says you don't have to be familiar with these movies in order to enjoy the book.
A curious thing that happened with this book as we got like closer to the release date is more and more people were asking me, like, what are the movies I need to watch if I'm going to buy this book? What are the movies I need to know about going in? And that had never happened with a basketball book. Nobody was like, what basketball game do I need to watch to know? Because like, as an author, like, it's your job to present information in a way that it's accessible to everybody. So if you take a chapter like the Michael Myers chapter, which Laramie and I had gone to watch the new Halloween movie, and I really enjoyed it. Michael Myers is my favorite movie monster of all time. But as you mentioned, he never talks. He's not said one word in any of his movies ever. So we went and saw the movie. It was really good. I was laying in bed. And then I was like, oh, man, you know what would be funny? If, like, Michael Myers talked. And then, like, oh, like a press conference. And I'm familiar with that. I watch a lot of basketball. It'd be funny to see him sitting at a table with, like, the Gatorades and, like, everybody sort of raising their hands and just him answering questions about the stuff. Because, like, if you watch his movies, there's a few questions you would like to know. Like, what? How did you learn to drive the car? Stuff like that. And so that's how you end up with these chapters. And so you take, like, this silly idea, and if you spend enough time with it, if you, like, invest in it enough, you can treat it very seriously and with, like, a great deal of respect. Let's take a silly thing and get very serious. Or let's take a serious thing and get very silly. Either way, just make sure you're treating it with the care and respect that it deserves, because this is something that you do enjoy. I don't spend very much time writing about stuff that I don't like.
Well, one of the chapters that actually was one of my favorites, it was talking about sort of the most intense opening scene, comparing the movie Face Off with Finding Nemo. I just thought it was really interesting. You have this sort of intense action movie that stars John Travolta and Nicolas Cage, and you have another little Pixar animated film. Mm-hmm. But animated films like Pixar, Disney's, they all have these tragic beginnings that leave little orphaned characters.
Yeah.
So is that how you ended up sort of coming up with that combination?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I was watching Finding Nemo. I've seen this movie several times. I've got...
Well, you have kids.
I have three kids, so this is like... the way that movie starts, you've got the mom and the dad, and they're like waiting for their eggs to hatch, and they're being very flirtatious, and it's like it's this very sweet thing. And then a barracuda shows up. This happens off screen, but he swims in. I'm assuming it's a guy, because this is like a thing a guy would do. He swims in to like eat all of the babies, and then the mom and the dad try to fight the barracuda off. And the dad survives. He gets knocked unconscious, and when he wakes up, his wife has been eaten. All of the babies, like 400 plus babies, have been eaten, with the exception of one, which turns out to be Nemo. And when you like spend more than 3 minutes thinking about it, you're like, well, this is like a twisted way to start a movie. If this was a human family, this would be really hard to watch. But it's like cartoon fish, so I guess it's okay. But you watch something like that, you're
like... It's like those crime scene photos you were looking at in college.
That's exactly what it is. This is really intense. This is like a tough way to start a movie. What are some other movies that have started like with a similar sort of tragedy? And Face Off is one of them. It starts off with John Travolta's son getting accidentally murdered by Nicolas Cage. Face Off is a silly movie. It's about two guys who switch faces. But within that universe, you can have some like very real conversations, like about John Woo. You can have conversations about like the trajectory of stardom with Nicolas Cage and John Travolta. You can get into some actual real like insightful stuff. But when you're putting a chapter together, you want to have something where somebody will read the title and then they'll remember, oh, this movie starts this way, it should make sense immediately why they're going to read it. And then when they start reading it, there should be a bunch of information in there that they weren't expecting, but that still makes sense.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the illustrator here. You have Arturo Torres doing the illustrations, mm-hmm. and he's a Dallas artist?
That's correct.
So tell us more about him, because the illustrations here are very graphic novel-y.
I didn't meet him in person. I found him on the internet. I saw like a flyer that he'd drawn for a rap group that I liked. His illustrations, they like have a certain, they have a very distinct texture to them. It's hard to find somebody who can draw in a way that if you see it on a computer, it still feels like you can sort of rub your fingers across the top of it and feel the ink. And then I found out later on his pictures look like that because he hand draws everything. He colors stuff on the computer, but like they take 3 days. There's like no way around it. He's like a slow worker, because he's drawing everything on these giant pieces of paper and then sort of scanning them in. It was clear that he was new to this sort of space. It was clear that he didn't understand like how gifted he was. It was easy for me to look at his art and go like, oh shoot, you should be making like real money doing this, because this is something special you're doing. And he just, I guess because he had been doing it his whole life, it didn't seem like anything special to him. But again, that was, you know, 5 years ago. This is book number 3 we've done together. And now you meet him now. He's 27. He's married. He's got a child. He's got a house. It's been cool to watch his art happen. If you look at the Wrap Your Book versus this one, his stuff now is unbelievable. I think he's one of the best working illustrators in America.
So are you buddies with John Leguizamo and Don Cheadle? Because you got them both to do the foreword and the afterword to the book.
I'm not buddies with them. I'm just a big, big fan of both of those guys. You know, Leguizamo has been like a hero for a long time. He was like our guy. He was the one out there doing it, working with everybody, working with Pacino. Like, he's been in so many like incredible movies. He did Romeo and Juliet. He did the Super Mario Brothers movie, which wasn't a good movie, but it was important to us. So, you know, you're figuring who do you want to write the foreword. He was like the first name I thought of. Him and Michelle Rodriguez. And so I like got feelers out to both of them, and John came back and he was like, definitely. I'd never met him before. We'd never had any sort of correspondence, with the exception of one time I wrote a thing about his comedy special from the late 90s called Freak. It was like a one-man show that Spike Lee directed. about like growing up as a Latino, transitioning from where he grew up into like the world of acting. And it's just really beautiful story that just gets into all of his family life. And I was explaining how important he was to me and how important I think he is to like the community in general. And he tweeted that out and was like very thankful for it. That was the only time we'd ever interacted. But yeah, he was like the nicest guy in the world. We talked on the phone for a good long time. Same with Don Cheadle. He'd been in so many movies that I'd watched and just this incredible actor. And like, I think one of the four coolest people in America. And we talked on the phone and he was the sweetest guy. And he was like, I'm in, you know, whatever you need me to do, I'm going to do it. He's just excellent.
Shea Serrano is a native of San Antonio and a New York Times best-selling writer. His newest book, Movies and Other Things, is available now. Aside from having two other books on the New York Times bestseller list, Serrano writes for the sports and pop culture website and podcast network, The Ringer. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Fernando Ortiz Jr. is our editor. And Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.